Welcome to Careertools. This week, 2022 Recruitment Update, Part 2.
Hey folks, whenever anybody talks to me about hiring, I always assume they're talking about being the hiring manager as opposed to being an interviewee. You might be listening to this cast thinking about being an interviewee, and if so, that's good. We hope you have success with wherever your decisions take you. But I just want to mention our third conference, which is the Effective Hiring Manager Conference. We have Effective Manager, Effective Communicator, and we also have Effective Hiring Manager. And if you want to make managing easier, all you need to do is learn how to hire. And it's not complex. It's not hard. It's not difficult to understand. It's just a discipline. It's a playbook you run every time, and we can teach it to you in one day. And then we'll stay in touch with you to make sure that when you're implementing it, you've got us by your side answering your questions about stuff you forgot from the conference 6 months or a year ago. So come to the website, check out where and when we'll be for our Effective Hiring Manager conferences, and sign up.
The next point that we've noticed is hiring is becoming more opaque. So the hiring process has always been a black box to candidates. You submit your resume, and sometime later, you either get a job offer or a rejection, and you're really not sure about what happens in between. And there are a lot of myths that abound. You know, ones like, when you're offered an interview, make sure that you are the first one after lunch, or make sure that you're the first or last candidate they see because of recency bias. Well, okay, but when somebody else is managing whoever else they're seeing, how am I supposed to schedule that? Like, it's not helpful. Right. So there's all these myths, and a great deal of the information you get about what goes on in this black box is wrong. There are thousands, perhaps millions of articles that say interviewing is a two-way street and you should be interviewing them, which is weird when you're an interviewer and people do it to you, that you can and should negotiate an offer despite the fact that you only have one thing to offer, and that's your service. You're not going to give them less service if they offer you less money. And also, the best way to get a raise is to get an offer at another company and then ask your boss to match it, which we've already said is a bad idea on so many levels.
It's all of that stuff that's out there that is leading to candidates making poor decisions and hiring managers, quite frankly, being perplexed at candidate behavior. One story that was told to us as an example, but not an outlier, was of a candidate that accepted a job. However, she asked if the job title could be changed in order to make it look like the step up that it was for her. The company agreed, adding specialist to her title. Can you guess what happened next here? She asked for more money on account of her being a specialist. The company rightly immediately rescinded their offer. I mean, wow.
I still can't laugh at the person that told me that. I think I was speechless for like a minute of just laughing. Like, I can't believe that anybody would have the gall to do that.
I mean, it's clever to a point, but I mean, cleverness is thinly veiled sometimes.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. Never seek to get something from someone you want a long-term relationship with.
You know? Right.
Exactly. If you're never going to see them again, fine. But if you want a long-term relationship, it's best to, you know, consider their interests too.
Well, and we've said this in the interviewing guidance in terms of, you know, negotiating or the lack of negotiating and what we recommend. Even if that particular company in that instance, that example, would have said, okay, I mean, all right, well, let me see right now. I'm going to go back and we're going to try to think about the day you start.
Oh, yeah. And everybody knows that story.
You better knock some people's socks off because everyone is going to be looking at you like, oh, this is the one that did the little, sly.
Got one over on us.
The sleight of hand.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Not a good place to start in an organization having to build a ton of new relationships.
So candidates are delaying accepting an offer because they're waiting for another. They're negotiating at the last minute. They're accepting offers and then rejecting them. And they think they're doing the right thing because the internet tells them that's okay. But to a hiring manager, they're just perplexing. Like, if nothing else, think about the hiring manager who's sat in an interview and this, you know, Andrew's come in to me as the hiring manager and Andrew has spent an hour telling me that he is the best candidate for my job. He knows ships inside out. He's done engineering since he was born. He knows everybody in the industry and he is excited to put that all on my project and make it a success. In fact, he thinks he can cut my project time by a year. And I'm like, yes, Andrew is my guy. We got on really well. He's got the brilliant references. I'm going to give him an offer. And I give him an offer. And then he says yes. And I'm like, yes, we're in. It's like I've asked him to marry me and he said yes. And we're like, good, we're engaged. It's happening. You know, let's get to the marriage. And then he comes along and says, no, I've changed my mind. Like the deflation of that and the what did you say to me that was actually real? You know, now I doubt every single word that you said, not just that you really wanted to work on this project, but any of your qualifications, all the people you said that you knew, anything, I doubt every single thing you said. Because if you lied about one thing, you lied about, you know, you probably lied about other things. It is literally like telling someone you'll marry them and then changing your mind. And I know people do that, but they do it rarely. And that's how often it should be happening. And according to the people we know who are hiring, it's happening a lot. And it's happening a lot because that's what the guidance people are getting from the internet.
Yeah. And if you're thinking, oh, that's okay, because I'll probably never interact with that hiring manager or that recruiter again. Yeah.
Yeah.
Think that. But just know it's a very, very small world out there. And I've been recruited by a recruiter to work for a company, went to work for that company. That recruiter moved on before I did. And tried to recruit me away from that company to go work for their new company. It's a small world. That could have easily happened with a hiring manager. And it's a small world out there.
It is.
It's not a good idea to burn bridges. And if you don't see this as burning a bridge, then
we've never had
it done to you. Yeah. So what does this mean for your career? Well, if the advice you're reading makes job hunting sound easy, you can disregard it because job hunting is not easy, right? So ignore that. If it promises you the secrets or job hunting hacks or things like that, or if it makes you feel really good, you know, it's kind of, oh yeah, you know, it's uplifting. That's not good job, you know, search advice. Job hunting is hard. Working on your resume is not a, you know, 30-minute exercise in creative writing. It's a days-long exercise in refinement and choosing between really hard things. I mean, this is what you're putting out as a representation
not only the representation of you, the representation of the best work you can do.
Yes.
And so when it has errors in it, the best you can do is have errors. Like, that is not a good sign. And people forget that. Sorry, I interrupted you.
No, you're exactly right.
Peeve.
Exactly. And that's the thing. You're putting this forward saying, this is my best, right? And so a proper resume review is agonizing. It should be hard. You know, I'm a big sports, I like sports. And so if you have a favorite football team, you don't like watching that football team play. It's agony because you're watching it and everything, you're like, oh no, why didn't they do that? Why didn't they do that, right? It's the same thing with your resume. It should be agonizing saying, is this the better way to word that? Is this the better accomplishment to put on as a bullet rather than this one? You know, it should be really hard. If it's easy, you're doing it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, and the same goes with other steps in the process. Practicing for interviews, doing it the right way is hard.
Yeah.
Right?
And boring. And, you know, why should I
and
say-
And time consuming.
Yeah. I'm just going to say the same answer 25 times.
Yes. What's the value in answering the word, tell me about yourself out loud? I know what I'm going to say.
Mm-hmm.
No, you have to say the words out loud. You have to, you know, say them several times. Figure out what words trip you up. What words should you take out so that you don't stumble over them? You know, what makes sense if someone is going to interrupt you where do they normally interrupt you at what part? So then maybe that's a part you need to add a little bit of extra information, or maybe that's a part where you almost invite a question and have a really good response that you've already thought through. We talk about all this in the interview guidance, but this is work. It takes a lot of time, right? Working your network and you know, keeping your network warm and all of that. It's not just scrolling through LinkedIn or scrolling through Facebook and, you know, hearting or double clicking people's posts. Yeah. It's actually having conversations, you know, reaching out, saying, hey, thought of you today. It's offering your help if they need it and genuinely trying to be able to help them if you can, because that will serve you better when inevitably the situation arises where you need some help.
So don't buy into the myth. Don't buy anyone who tells you when I did this, this is what worked. That's an anecdote. It is not data.
Are you saying the plural of anecdote is not data?
It is not.
I've heard that before.
A single anecdote is not representative of the entire market or even all of the hiring managers. You take advice from the people who have done hiring 10,000 times, not the person who hired once or the person who got a job once.
Yeah.
And don't be less than straightforward or ethical when looking for a job. Stop looking for the edge and start looking for a relationship. You're not looking to get one over on people. Every time you do that, every time you get one over on a hiring manager and that person becomes your boss, you've already damaged the relationship. It's short-term thinking and it's stupid. I'm going to go that far. Stupid.
Exactly. So what does this mean for managers in this climate, right? It means that you can expect a lot of candidates to do all of this silly or perplexing things that we just talked about. This is what people are consuming, is this guidance, this information. And so the best way to deter this behavior is by being straightforward and ethical yourself. Tell a candidate, this is the offer. I really want you to come work for my team. I think you'll be great at X, Y, and Z, and I need someone in place by this date. I'm sure you're interviewing elsewhere and that you have other offers. I'll be happy to answer any questions you have at any time. And I'm afraid I can't budge on the offer or the date. If you can't accept the offer or let me know by that date, I'll wish you well and move on. If you can and will negotiate, then fine. That's okay. All right. Tell them that. But being very clear about, you know, what you have and what your, you know, parameters are. And, you know, if you do have flexibility on certain things, then share that. That's fine. We're not saying, you know, draw a line in the sand or anything. If you have flexibility, okay. But by being clear about what you have, you provide this window into what has for a long time been a black box. And so that in all likelihood will provide you a better outcome. It's like that old saying, right? The best disinfectant is sunshine.
It is.
And that's what we're recommending here.
Hey folks, Mark here. For the 100th time, maybe the 1,000th time, I'm going to remind you about the M Conference. I had two or three people last year come to the M Conference and say, I almost didn't come, and I feel stupid because this was the best conference they'd ever been to. A number of very senior managers and executives in the community are speakers, and the speakers, interestingly enough, stay, and they're part of the audience as well. So you can rub shoulders with them, you can talk to them, you can make them part of your network. It's the most important and most valued conference of all the conferences we do here at Manager Tools, and it's the highlight of our year. So come join us October 26th and 27th in Chicago.
Okay, next, return to work. So the pandemic has forever changed what we think of as a suitable place from which to work. And that said, that human nature has not actually changed at all. And whilst a lot of us consider ourselves happier and just as productive working from home, you cannot deny the research that says we communicate more with the people that we sit next to. I read the original research and it's scary how little we communicate with people and how short the distance has to be for us to stop communicating with them. And that's causing a schism in the market. Candidates are looking for fully remote or hybrid roles, but companies want their employees back in the office because they know they get better outcomes. And whilst demand overall stays high, the companies are giving in. Apple, Google, and JP Morgan Chase, to name some, have all relaxed or made the work from home component of a hybrid larger because they need people right now. The moment that changes, it looks like it's going to change, they will be able to demand what they want.
Absolutely. So what does this mean for your career? Well, if the demand is high for candidates who have your skills and the experience that you bring to the table, then you may well still be able to negotiate a favorable work from home situation. But just like Wendy said, if the demand falls, be ready to have to trade in some of that flexibility for maybe other things, right? For example, you might not be working on the projects you want or get paid the same, right? I mean, that's just the thing. Some organizations, some projects, some stuff, there may be a thing where they say, yeah, I mean, to work on this project though, you have to be in the office because we're having meetings every day.
And you get the choice. You keep the job, yeah. You go into the office, or you don't and you find something else. And that it's absolutely fine. We're not saying that you should choose one way or the other.
No.
We're saying be aware that it's a choice and that there are outcomes to the choice you make. And then you weigh that choice up against your personal circumstances, your family needs, and what you want.
Yes, that's a great point, Wendy. You have a choice and understand that the company has choices, right? So you both have choices in this. And remember that circumstances change. The companies that Wendy, you know, just mentioned, as well as many other companies, have changed their policies on working from home or remote work or, you know, office work. They've changed those policies several times over the last couple of years, right? Talk about waffling and trying to find the
yeah,
right,
oscillating.
You know, ebb and flow, yeah. Right? That is, yes, definitely something that companies are trying to figure out, and they will continue to try to figure it out, which means that the circumstances will change. So changes like these are another reason why a lot of folks churn through new jobs. They interview with a manager, they seem to hit it off, they like it, they're working on a project or certain work that they like doing in conditions that they like. And by the time they start that new job, one or more of those factors may have changed. So this is not to say that you should, you know, not seek to change roles if it's the right time, but just a reminder about something that could definitely happen that maybe you haven't thought of as something. Maybe you think, well, if I'm going to this company, right, they have a hybrid model. You're in the office, you know, 2 days a week, you're home 3 days a week. Just understand that's not set in stone.
No. No one says that it's never going to change. And it almost certainly is. And the newest person usually gets the worst end of the stick when things change. If an exception is going to be made, it's not going to be made for the new person.
Absolutely.
So what does this mean for managers? The twin priorities for managers are results and retention. And retaining your top performers might mean carving out exceptions from the work from home policies for them. And managers generally underestimate the latitude that they have to allow their directs to work in a way that they want to. A manager can easily say, yeah, you can leave every day at 4 to pick up your kids. And what happens? HR doesn't come around and like look at everybody's desk and see if they're there at 4:25. And even if they did, the managers say, oh yeah, I said that's okay. And the HR would go, yeah, all right then. You know, the policy is there, but managers can change it and you can change it in order to retain your top performers. And if there's a policy that comes down from on high and applies to everyone and you don't go into bat for somebody that you really want to keep, they take that as a personal ding and that's when you start to lose them. Like the fact that somebody, a top performer, wants something different that isn't under the policy is your chance to both reward them and improve your relationship. So even if you don't get the change, the fact that you went into bat for them is enough, usually.
Yeah. And having been in very similar situations in my career, I can tell you it's much better to be able to go to bat for them on those changes early, very early.
Yeah, before anybody's had a chance to think about it too much.
As soon as you get a whiff, there's a sniff of, oh, we're going to start mandating, you know, that people do this or whatever. And here's the thing. I feel like I keep plugging one-on-ones. But the only way that you can be equipped to have those conversations at a moment's notice is by knowing your directs and having a good relationship with them, knowing what those parameters are, knowing that, you know, their wife is pregnant and she's got a high-risk pregnancy, so she has doctor's appointments every 2 weeks, right? And so there's things that they have scheduled on Thursdays and it's a non-negotiable. And so if something comes up that's going to impact that, rather than having to have a conversation with each of your people about this potential new change that you heard about and them voicing it as a concern and blah, you know, and then going round and round this thing, if you know right away, oh, that's going to really impact my directs. Okay, well, hey, are we going to be able to make exceptions about that? Here's a use case in a situation where this won't work. Are we going to be okay with it, right? You can do that very early in the process.
And going to your direct and saying, there's going to be this thing about this policy, but don't worry, I've already cleared it for you. That's like two wins. That's two gold stars.
Yes. You're illustrating to them, I know you have this thing, which furthers their willingness to share more stuff with you going forward.
Yeah, because they go,
there's actually a benefit to me giving you that information. It doesn't just get used against me, right? You actually use it for me. Okay, right? So again, I feel like I'm really overselling one-on-ones, but I can't oversell one-on-ones.
Yeah, I don't think it can be done. Yeah. That they're priceless, as the ads say.
They are priceless.
The last topic is unionization. So there has been a lot of news about increasing unionization, and most of it is overblown. I think it was the Amazon one, but I'm not sure. I was reading an article that said, yeah, unionization, it's everywhere. Maybe it was Starbucks. One of them. Anyway, this big company is being unionized. And then when you actually read the article, it was 17 people in a subdivision of a division. You know, it was a company of, I don't know, 100, 200,000 people, and 17 of them unionized. That's not this company is unionizing.
Right.
So a lot of it is overblown, but it should serve as a warning to you that something is rotten in the state of Denmark, to quote Shakespeare. Unionization increases when people feel that they have less power individually than they would have as a group. When the work salary benefits, conditions, and so on, when they feel like that bargain is fair, what they are being rewarded equitably with the work that they're putting in, there is no talk of unionization. People just don't. But, you know, speaking in generalizations, the reports of companies who are making mass layoffs over Zoom or depositing severance pay before they've told employees they're being laid off, or making layoffs at the same time as announcing massive profits, that's when people start to feel like this bargain isn't fair. And if we band together, we might get a fairer bargain. And all of those three things that I said as, you know, unfair things, those are all things that have happened in the last month or two.
Right. So don't use your organization or role power as a cudgel or a club. I feel like we've said that before, once or twice.
7 times, yeah. And, you know, I argue that those things aren't just unfair, they're unprofessional. You know, to not let someone know that they're being laid off, or to do it over Zoom rather than going to somebody's house or bringing them into work. You know, doing those things that are unprofessional is what starts people thinking about unionization.
Absolutely. What this means for your career is when you're weighing a new job offer and, you know, there are a lot of things to consider. You can't just focus on salary. Now, the easy thing about salary is it's a number, mm-hmm. right?
It's easy comparable, right?
You can count, right? I mean, counting is fairly easy, right? So you also have to consider, are you treated fairly and ethically? And, you know, I mean, as you go through the hiring process with people, do they act with integrity? Are they, you know, acting ethically? Do you feel like they're treating, you know, people either in the pipeline, other candidates, or if you don't see that, other people that they, you know, interact with fairly? And so another good one is the hiring process efficient, right? A cumbersome, slow hiring process could be indicative of other processes that you're going to interact with or experience going to work for that company. So I don't want to hear, oh, it takes me forever to get my PTO approved. How long did it take you to get hired?
Yes.
Well,
yeah, right. right?
Yeah, lost my resume 3 times. Oh, that's not a good sign.
Yeah, exactly. What information is out there about the company and the way it treats its workers that you can find? What information is there about your potential division and manager that you can find? Investigate, you know, more than the pretty jobs on the company's intranet site. Those are made by, you know, marketing that are trying to, you know, get people to come work
here. Yeah, here's the picture of our head office, and we'll just like make out that your desk will look like this.
Right. Yeah. That's or it's even more personalized, right? Uh-huh. Look at what Ralph does, right? Yes. This is what Ralph's day looks like. You know, gosh.
Some marketing guy made that up.
Right, exactly. And I love you, Ralph, but your experience may not be my experience. So, yeah. Does that analysis of looking at all of those things, does that give you pause? Is there information about behaviors that you see that make you think, that just isn't right or doesn't seem fair or doesn't pass the sniff test, right? If there is, then pass on the job. It's far worse to be forced to carry out behavior that you believe is unfair or unethical as an employee than it is to wait for another job, right? It'll erode your personal morale, right? It'll be rough.
Yeah, absolutely. So for managers, working with unions makes your job harder. Every conversation that currently has 2 people involved will have at least 3 people involved when the union's there. And often everything you want to do will have to be passed through the union, even things that you consider to be trifling. And I know that in different countries and in some industries, you're already working with unions and you're probably agreeing with me.
Yeah.
If you're not, then make it your mission to treat your people well. Treat them professionally. Do what you can to accommodate their needs and desires, as well as paying them a salary. Remember, the salary is not enough. And the more you show loyalty and commitment, the more they're going to repay you with loyalty and commitment. And the more satisfied they are, the less they're going to want to unionize.
Yeah, I've worked with several unions in my career. And I will tell you what I see if I had to kind of, you know, again, summarize unions and what I've seen is they're there to protect from really bad managers. But what they do in a lot of cases is they also stifle a lot of really good managers, right? Mm-hmm. Bringing everyone to the middle.
Yes.
And so understand as a manager that, you know, sometimes those union situations where you have that third person in the room, they're not thinking about just this one situation with this one employee. Mm-hmm. And so all of that leeway that Wendy mentioned earlier, you lose some of that. Mm-hmm. You don't have that. And so you have less, you know, freedom and flexibility to be able to say, of course you can go home at 4 on Thursdays to go to those doctor's appointments for the next 3 months. Like, of course, right? Because the union rep or the shop steward or whomever is going to look at it, or at least if they're doing a good job, if they're doing their role, right, they should be looking at it as, well, could everyone go home at 4 o'clock on Thursday, right? And of course not, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Anyways, sorry, little diatribe there.
No, that's okay. It's good. jobs in the broadest sense are always hot topic in the business news. You know, people are always talking about the number of jobs filled and the vacant and the people employed and the people who are unemployed, because it's an important indicator of the economy, and the economy has an effect on the rest of our lives. I remember I hated doing economics because of everything you touch. You know, when you change the interest rates, it changes something else, and then you have to do something else. Like, yeah, it just drove me nuts. But the one thing I remember is hemlines go with interest rates. So the better the economy is doing, the shorter the skirts. So the economy has an effect on everything, including fashion. So yeah, it's important to be aware of it, not just, you know, about your job and your salary, but how long your skirt should be.
Mm-hmm.
A wise professional is always aware of the report and their meaning. But when it comes down to it, the only report that really matters is the one in your house. When there are reports of high unemployment, what matters is if you have a job. When you want to change jobs, it doesn't matter how many vacancies there are in the entire country. It matters how many vacancies there are for jobs for which you would want an offer. So for every report you see, drill down and ask yourself, what does this mean for me? Thanks, Andrew. It was a long one, but I hope it was worth it.
Thanks, Wendy. I loved it.
That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with a new topic.
Bye, everyone.